Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I wanted to talk to you about rotoballer.com. Win big in 2022 with rotoballer.com's MLB and DFS Premium Pass, which includes 15 exclusive lineup tools, daily DFS cheat sheets, and our new Team Sync platform. Use Rotoballer's exclusive hitter projections, pitching planners, DFS value plays, research stations, lineup optimizer, and more to help you win big. For a limited time, get your MLB Premium Pass for an extra 10% off with your discount code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A. Just visit rotoballer.com, use promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A for 10% off the Premium Pass for the MLB season, and get started to rotoballing like a boss. And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 486. Got a special guest tonight, first-time guest for the show, a guest I've wanted on for quite a while. I'm glad we're getting to do it now. He is a very, very good fantasy baseball player and a phenomenal personality on the old Twitter there. You can find him on Twitter at Torres Takes. Torres, how we doing, man?
What is going on, Bubba? I am so happy to be here. Thank you for having me on. Listen, I neglected my real job today to get ready for this podcast, but we are here for the people. We are here to put out a good show. I may not have a job tomorrow, but you know, I figure whatever compensation I'm getting to appear on the show, that'll hold me over for a little while. So I know we haven't worked out all the details yet, but we'll discuss that when we're done.
Yeah, my people will talk to your people, figure something out. But in the meantime, I am very, very excited to talk to you about some NFBC lineups and some first half surprises in the AL. But first off, we got to get to know Torres a little more here. For those that have not listened to him on other shows or watched him on Twitter, which is amazing. I watch all your videos, and your most recent one where you basically mimic Independence Day and give a speech about us degenerates that gamble on baseball. It was absolutely amazing. You bringing your kids into it, it's such great stuff. What is your inspiration behind this? Like, your creativity takes new heights all the time. What's the passion behind this? What's the ideas behind this?
It's just a creative outlet. I mean, I don't make music. I'm not an artist, you know, so like, I don't really have another outlet. So I play a lot of fantasy baseball, and I figure, you know, if it's something I'm going to spend a lot of time doing, let me create something with it. You know, I love playing the game, but, I think everybody needs some level of creativity, and this is it for me. And I don't know, it just, some of the stuff just comes to me. I know my kids love it. So it also gives me a little motivation to, come up with some of these ideas. So yeah, I'm happy. Thank you for the kind words, and I'm happy people are enjoying them, and I keep putting stuff out there.
Yeah, I love it. And like you said, the kids enjoying it's really awesome, because you can tell they're involved in it. And you just like that. I still laugh at that Independence Day one. It was so good. Absolutely gold. Out of curiosity, because Gleyber Torres is a guy that I've been in on many years and been disappointed many times. He's playing well this year, but what is the inspiration behind Torres Takes? Is it Gleyber Torres? Is your last name Torres, which I know it is, wink wink, but is there more to it than just your last name, is what I'm trying to say?
No, that's really it. Well, I'll give you a little bit of the backstory. I mean, yeah, my last name is Torres. I told the story in another podcast, but I'll say it here. I used to work at a college in a counseling center, and it was absurd. They used to pay us to work over the summer, even though there was like no students on campus. So we had a lot of time to hang out. And luckily I was blessed, man. I had my best friend there. And my boss was a big fantasy football fan. So we would spend the summers really like prepping for fantasy football. It's crazy.
Awesome.
But, you know, it got to the point where I would walk in the morning and my boss would, the first thing he would say to me, he'd be like, "Hey, you got any tourist takes for me?" Nice. And, you know, and then it just kind of started. And I'm like, "Oh, I'm going to start a tourist takes Twitter." And, you know, and he laughed at me. Like, me, him and my friend were like, when I had like two followers, they're like, "What are you doing? You're wasting your time, dude." And yeah, it's that's where tourist takes kind of originated. So I told him he's going to get, if I ever make it big, he'll get some royalties for that.
I was about, to say, I hope you send every video to him and say, "Hey, here's a Torres take for you." I hope you do. That'd be so good. But I love it. It's good stuff. Really, really good stuff. I'm looking forward to what's next on the agenda here. It's, some of it's like super like serious. Some of it's so funny and over the top. Like I just love it every moment of it. So kudos to you, because something you kind of said there is, and I've said it with some other people I talk to a lot, is in the end, this needs to be fun. If you're not having fun playing fantasy baseball, then you're just not doing it for the right way. Like even my podcast here, you know, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I have fun talking to people, talking baseball, and that's the point of it, is having fun. So I love that you're doing it. You're bringing a different avenue to it, and it's really, really fun. So I'm looking forward to more of that.
Thank you.
How is, before we get into like lineups and, or not lineups per se, but the bench, we're going to talk about how we circulate our benches in NFBC, because it is an interesting topic. How is your NFBC season going for you?
It's going okay. I thought I'd be doing a little bit better. I felt good about some of my teams coming into the year. In my main, I'm third place, just moved in the top 100 after being like 400 something, you know, a little more than a month ago. So feeling good about the run that team is on. But yeah, and then I'm in four or five draft champions, and most of them are in second. I had one just total dud, but overall can't complain. You know, still a lot of time left. I know it feels, for me at least, it feels like the season has been forever, but we still got half a season to go. So things can certainly change.
Yeah, I'd say a third place in the main with the top 100 and then a second places in most of your DCs is a pretty good go so far. But as you said, long ways to go. It's we're halfway there. And like that's the thing with baseball. And so many people say it's such a long season. It's crazy. And it is. It's a grind. It's not for the faint of heart. We're seeing a lot of fantasy football talk already on the old Twitter there. And we're seeing some fab runs where certain leagues, things are kind of slipping through the cracks already. So yeah, we'll see how that continues on. Obviously, in your main events, usually not so much, but you'll still see it in some, that's for sure. But it's a great point here, because you're playing pretty much 15s only, it sounds like, with your mains and your DCs. Is that correct?
Yep. Okay. Only 15. My home league is a 12. So, but yeah, mainly I kind of, that was intentional, because just switching back and forth between the 12s and the 15s, I don't know how people do that. It's a very different game. And I mean, it's hard enough, at least for me, to like manage just the teams that I have. I don't know how people are doing like 50 leagues with some of them being 12, some of them being 15s. Like it's amazing to me that people do that.
Yeah, pretty much. I do mostly 12s on the NFBC, except for like TGFBI and the Barf League. Those are 15s. For the most part, my money leagues are in 12s. I have a couple DCs that I did with buddies and stuff that they twisted my arm to do when it was early draft season. But I like the 12s. I get the 15s. 15s are a grind. 15s are tough. And that makes this even more of a fun conversation, because Torres came to me in the DMs with an idea to talk about handling your benches in the NFBC. And for those that aren't super familiar with it, you have a 7-man bench and there's no IL spots. So it's the old golden rule. Like, do you stash guys? Do you stash prospects? Like, how do you control it? Do you stream guys? You know, like Roto Gut himself, Vlad Sether, talks about churning and burning all the time. There's a lot to be said about that. But also, when there's not much available on the waiver wire, like when you cut bait, so many fun questions there. So how do you go about circulating, I guess, your bench in an NFBC format? Because you want to have like guys that can fill in case of injuries. At the same time, maybe you want to stash a little, who knows? So how do you control your bench?
Yeah, this is what I struggled with. You know, I started playing NFBC last year, and I feel like it's such an important topic. And especially as a new player, it's something you really, there's a learning curve there. So the way I do it, and I have no idea if this is the right way or whatever, but I feel like this kind of, I've reached, you know, I've gotten to a point where I feel comfortable with this and it's working for me. So my bench is comprised of four hitters and three pitchers, ideally. You know, so why more hitters than pitchers? Because NFBC, as we know, we can make those midweek lineup adjustments on Friday with our hitters only, though. And I love this feature because, you know, someone goes down with an injury on Tuesday, I don't want to take that zero all week. Like, I'm in a, you know, my home league is weekly lineups, and it just sucks. It really sucks when, you know, you when you lose somebody beginning of the week and you're just taking a zero there. So I love that. Love NFBC and their software. It's awesome. Yeah, why do I have the four hitters? I mean, as we know, injuries are up this year. We still have the COVID situation, not quite as prevalent, but it's still there. So in my mind, it's just absolutely necessary to be covered at every position, except for catcher. Because really, you're better off just taking a zero than picking up a catcher off the wire, in most cases, in a 15-teamer. The other thing is I want to be able to maximize my team's matchups. So if I have like a fringe player who's facing the Yankees in the first part of the week, but then he's facing the Orioles, you know, Friday through Sunday, you know, that's I'm benching him Monday and plugging him in there on Friday. Maybe you have a few multi-position guys who can give you a little bit more roster flexibility in that situation. Yeah, maybe you can get away with three hitters on your bench. You know, it also depends on your needs, though. You know, like, for example, in my main event, I need a closer. You know, I'm the one category I'm really struggling is saves. So going forward, I'm probably going to be dedicating an extra bench spot to a speculative closer. You know, but again, so going back to my composition, ideally, I'm going to have a corner, a middle, and an outfielder, along with one multi-position player. Now, it depends on which players I have, but one or two of them are going to be fungible in my mind. Guys that I'm okay with dropping for someone else who maybe has a really good week of matchups coming up, right? As we know, we should be churning the bottom of our roster, maximizing at-bats, and exploiting those good matchups. So that's it for my hitters. With my pitchers, so three spots for them. I want one of them to be a starter who is someone I'm going to feel comfortable with starting like 50% of the time. So in 15 teamers, maybe this is like a James Caprellian or Cole Irvin or Michael Lorenzen type pitcher. You know, I'm not starting Cole Irvin on the road against the Yankees, but at home against the Royals, sure. Yeah. Then the next spot, I want a reliever, but I don't want just a middle reliever. You know, in the past, I've wasted roster spots in middle relievers and, you know, thinking, well, at least maybe I could throw them in there and get some good ratios if, you know, my guys don't have good matchups. Listen, those guys are a dime a dozen. If you really are that desperate, you can find another good middle reliever that's you can pick up for a dollar or two on any given week. I think you need to be using that spot on either a closer spec. Again, depends on your needs, but for me, like using on a closer spec or even maybe an IL stash, you know, there needs to be some plausible upside there, in my opinion. Like, for example, I had Nick Lodolo. That was the guy for me for the past few weeks that I stashed on my bench a few weeks ago, feeling that he could really, that there was some upside there in the second half. And the last spot is usually a pitcher who I'm streaming. And a lot of times it's me, you know, looking 2 weeks ahead, who's facing the A's in 2 weeks, who's facing the Tigers in 2 weeks. You should never get to Sunday and then realize like, holy crap, I only have like four or five decent starters for the week. You know, the best players are thinking weeks ahead, not days. And if you're not prepared, you're going to run into trouble because you end up starting guys. I put out a video over the weekend about Michael Lorenzen. You know, he was on the road against Houston. And I think some people may have just checked out and just don't care and just plugged him into their lineup. But I think some people really plugged him in there. And I'm like, well, why? You know, like, you don't have to. You should be looking ahead, you know, and making sure that you've got enough pitchers. And again, we got to be looking 2 to 3 weeks ahead. Yep. So that's how I do it. Interested to hear what you have to say, Bubba.
Well, first, I'm going to ask you some more questions on this. I like the idea of the 4-3. I love how you broke down your hitters as you covered your bases in case there's an injury. I got a corner, I got a middle, I got an outfielder, and I got a multi-position guy that could fill in at any of those. Say you have two injuries. Like you said, injuries are up. We're getting a lot of them. So there's certain weeks where it's like, oh, man, what in the world are we doing now? And some of them, unfortunately, get announced after the Fab run's over, before lock on Monday. So you really need to have that flexibility, and it makes things even more stressful. You can't just be like, oh, it's Sunday, I'll put a couple bids in for a couple dollar guys, and hopefully it gets filling for a week or two. You're out of luck now. So I like how you broke it down that way. It's not just four hitters. There's reasons behind these hitters. That's a very, very good point. There's a lot more strategy, I think, involved, especially in these non-IL spots leagues that people need to like think about of like stashing. As you don't want to stash four outfielders. Like, what are you doing? Like, you're just going to be you're hamstringing yourself. So I think that's very, very interesting. And then I like to call on the pitchers. I think the spec closer thing is a real deal. That's big. I like the idea of, especially in 15s, 12s, like those 50% pitchers in a 15, they might even be cuttable in a 12. That's a whole different animal. Mm-hmm. But I like that idea in a 15 because the replacements on the wire in the 15s are tough, like really, really tough. So you kind of have to have those guys. You're like, okay, yeah, I do want to use them more often than not. I just can't use them all the time. So that's definitely something to keep in mind. And then the Lodolo guys. When it comes to IL stashes, how do you determine if they're worth stashing? Because like Tyler Miguel, I dropped everywhere when he got moved to the 60-day IL. That's a bummer. That's a big long-term deal. But just like, for instance, to start the season, Chris Sale, we knew he was going to be out for like 2 to 3 months. Some people still drafted him. How long would you stash him for? Is that just like a complete no-go for you?
Yeah, that's a no. Like, I would never draft a player that is going to be out for that length of time. What's that?
Yeah, that's already hurt.
Right. That's the other thing. Like, we're gonna run into injuries. Why chase them? You know. Yeah. So because there's always that re-injury risk too. There's really, I'm just not going to put myself in that position. Like during the season, like with Odolo, it was a couple weeks. That's probably the max. Like, I held Andrew Heaney for a while when he first got injured. I held him probably for like 3 weeks, but I was pretty proactive in cutting him. I think when I cut him, still a lot of people were holding him. So it's really got to be an exceptional player. I think we can't, and I made mistakes, but we just can't be afraid to make mistakes. You sometimes just have to be aggressive. That's how I do it. I know people have different styles and different strategies, but it kind of works for me right now.
There's tons of ways to go about it, kind of what you're saying out there. But another couple of things you mentioned that I liked a lot. You mentioned how, like, you know, your first year you made mistakes, but you realized the mistakes. I'm doing the same thing. Like, you were saying we have to be willing to screw up. That's one thing I've been preaching this year. Like, you got to be willing to drop guys and take the consequences. Like, they might turn it on, but for now they're killing your team. Or, like, basically, you need to know when to drop a guy, hold a guy, stuff like that. And you're going to make mistakes. You're not going to get them all right. That's just the bottom line. It's going to happen. So that's part of the game. But what you're learning from last year is the construction. The look ahead thing is huge. I talk about it all the time with Toby on our Fab recap shows. There's so many weeks where, like, I don't love the pitchers on the wire. So I'm looking at the two start guy next week, or I'm looking at like what you're talking about. And I'm going to go get him like for like $5 now instead of 55 bucks next week or something. Like, I'll start doing that stuff and stash them in those regards looking forward. I should probably do that more with hitters. That is a flaw of mine. 100%. I will fall on that sword. And it's really pathetic that it's a big flaw of mine, because I write a weekly column every Friday that tells me the schedule ahead. So I have it up. I could literally look at the following week. It's right there. Yeah. Just dumb me, you know, Friday night, let's not even worry about it. But, that's something that I should put into my repertoire to be more proactive about. That's a great point. It's not, I guess we focus on pitching so much because it's like that volatile thing. We like two start pitchers. When a blow up happens, it feels so much worse than a guy going like 0-16 on the week. You just don't really notice it as much because guys are playing every day and they're hitting, and there's good and bads fluctuate so quickly. Where a pitcher, like, they have a bad two start, it just blows the whole thing up. And it feels so much worse. So I guess that's a flaw of mine, is focusing more on the pitchers than the hitters. But to the question you asked me earlier, the way I construct it, and it's not always like a 4-3. It's a lot of it, like you said, kind of team dependent. Do I need more hitting? Do I need more pitching? Like, where are we sitting here? But for the most part, I'm in line with what you're saying. Like, I want to have enough bats to kind of fix injuries. And you don't want too much pitching, because then you have some of the worst decisions to make every week. Like, who do I sit? Like, that's never the best right. thing in the world. Because it never turns out properly. And it's like half the guys you're holding on to, you probably don't need to hold on to. And you're just doing it because you can, I guess. And so a lot of it is roster construction. Like, what does your team need? But I really like your idea of 4-3. I think there's a lot to be said about that for sure. So we'll see. When you're doing your fab, I'll kind of just make a twist on this because it involves your roster construction, your bench maintenance. Mm-hmm. You talked about your churning and burning. Do you have like a set kind of program you follow? Like, do you go and check a couple websites? Do you have like a plan of attack? Like, how do you go about your fab? I'm curious about that.
This is still a work in progress. I'll be honest.
It is for everybody. Real quick, I just want to say is, yeah. I love this. I think I've asked almost every guest I've ever had on this show, at least in the last couple of years. I don't think we've had ever two. It's like a snowflake. There's no two answers the same. So how do you do fab? Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah. So I try to do it, honestly. Like, I've realized that I do better when I start earlier in the week. Like, if I save my fab until, like, if I start really looking at it on Saturday, for example, I just feel like there's just too much to digest and I just don't make good decisions. I'm just a person, I need to be prepared, you know? So like, I'm trying to do a little bit like each day. You know, maybe like Wednesday, I look at the hitters that are available. And then Thursday, I look at the pitchers. I'm a big proponent of RasBall, as many, many people are. So that's one of the tools that I use. You know, so that's really it. I'm still trying to get a good rhythm there. I feel like I'm getting better. So yeah, I mean, that's really obviously FanGraphs. I use a lot. Yeah, I know people kind of like, there are people who kind of think this may be, I don't know, they kind of make fun of like the hot streaks or whatever, but I tend to look at FanGraphs like last 14 days and yep. I don't know. I mean, again, there are different views on this, but I find that to be very helpful and it's helped me to identify a lot of players that are kind of like on the upswing, even if it's like a very small sample. Like, I was on the Wire podcast like 4 or 5 weeks ago and I was like, I think Kevin Biggio, like something's there. And it was only yep. like 20 at bats and it yep. sounded crazy at the time. But you're seeing, like, I just saw a tweet. He's like one of the OPS leaders over the yeah. past month, or, you know, yeah. Or Brandon Drury. I picked up Brandon Drury in my main event. I got him for $6 uncontested, you know, cause I yeah. saw something in just like 20 at bats and I was like, all right, you know, maybe there's something here. So that's a tool that I use quite a bit. So yeah, it's still a work in progress, but it'll always be, I think.
I think, yeah, it's always an ever-changing game. But the Kevin Biggio thing is very interesting because I picked him up in a lot of places this past week because I started seeing the same things you're seeing. And he led off on Wednesday for the Toronto Blue Jays. Mm-hmm. So let's just throw that out there. Something's getting better for him. Like, plate discipline, a lot of things are getting better for Kevin Biggio. So we'll see if it sticks. But, hey, he was cheap, and we know what he can do. The pedigree's there. So I'm with you on that one. But I 100% look at streaks, and I agree. Some people think it's crazy, but that's the DFS mindset in me. I've done DFS forever, and that's why I try to tell people, even if you don't play DFS, I think listening to DFS content and season-long content play very well together because you can get mm-hmm. splits. Like, you're looking at matchups for the following week. You'll get that by playing DFS. You can kind of know where these matchups are, and then playing the hot streaks because, in theory, in FAB, you're looking for guys to help you out for a couple weeks, and then you're moving on. So you want the guy that's playing hot. Like, you want that. Or you mm-hmm. want to find the guy, like you said, like the Drury's that you can get for cheap and then just ride for a while. That's a beautiful thing. Like, when you had a Drury, I doubt you expected him to be this guy you've locked into your lineup forever. You probably thought, okay, I'm going to ride him for a little bit and see, you know, when, you know, India comes back and he goes back to the bench, I'll drop him. Cool, whatever. And now he's a mainstay right. in your lineup. Like, that's pretty darn awesome. So right. I think that's a great call. I have nothing against I know what you're saying. Some people poo-poo it. Yes. But, I think there is a lot to be said about current quote unquote hot streaks. And you know what? It's maybe because we don't say it as eloquently enough as Toby does when he looks at his rolling graphs because that's all rolling graphs are doing. They're looking at the last 14, 30 days, whatever, doing the same thing, essentially. We just don't have a graph in front of us to make it look, you know, pretty. So I'm 100% on board with you on that.
It's about looking at skills, right? We're not looking at like who has the most RBIs over the past 2 weeks, you know, or it's not about the outcome. I don't even look at home runs, whatever. Like, I'm just looking at, and I'm sick enough that I know like this stuff, like a lot of these players, I know kind of like what their baseline is, you know, like what their baseline contact rate or, you know, fly ball percentage. So like, if I'm looking at, you know, say the last 14 days and I see there's a player there whose contact rate has gone up 10 points in the past 2 weeks, or their hard hit rate has gone up 10 points, you know, that's like, okay, let me pay attention to that. What's going on here? Dig in a little deeper. And a lot of times I feel like, there are some, you know, I get some gems that way. So,
yeah. And it's like, people also make fun of X stats, and I get they're very, very loose. I'm not going to ignore that. They're definitely not the end all be all, but what they do is they at least kind of open my eyes to maybe dig deeper on someone and figure out what's going on. Like, by no means is it the end all be all, but it's just another quick like search. Cause on Savant, you can be like, hey, give me the last like 15 days of, you know, X this minus whatever, like whatever one you want to look at. And at worst, it gives you something to look at. You can be like, it's fool's gold or something. But otherwise, hey, you never know. It could be something. Or I like looking at guys that I can improve like their barrel rates or their hard hit rates, which it goes into like the other metrics you're talking about. It's not just home runs and stuff. It's overall quality skills that you can definitely build.
Yeah. And just a larger point, like, we are trying to put together a puzzle, you know? So it's, I think people shoot themselves in the foot when they look at something like that, or whether it's that or something else, another stat, and they're like, oh, that's, you know, they kind of dismiss it. Like, you're just open your mind a little bit, you know, and like at least consider, like, it's not, we're not saying that it's the, like you said, the be all end all, but it's a piece, you know, incorporate it. There's no reason to just be so dismissive of certain things. I see some of that, and I'm like, you know, I try to, you know, intentionally just kind of just remain open-minded, because I feel like it just helps me become a better player.
You have to. It's like the old adage, not even just for fantasy baseball. It's like, if you're not willing to listen and learn something new every day, you're never going to get better. Like, you have to be willing to admit when you're wrong. And also, you know, maybe you're right, and now you can help someone else be right. Like, there's so many ways that we could all work together, because baseball, it's one of the hardest games to play, let alone predict. And we're trying to predict baseball. Like the best players are good 30% of the time. That's just crazy. Like, in no other world is that a good thing. So if you can find a little puzzle, like you said, this is like one of those like 1,000-piece puzzles. This isn't a puzzle you or my kids put together. This is like the big boy stuff that you need to use glue and put in a frame later. And you can't, it's not easy to do. So I think that's a very, very valid point when you're trying to break it all down. Any other thoughts for the NFBC before we get into surprises? Because it's a great conversation. There's so much in this NFBC content out there, but it's so much fun getting it from different people, especially, like, you know, I'm relatively new to NFBC. You said this is your second year. We're still learning. We're always learning. And I think it's fun to kind of chat about it, because it can be an intimidating format for many. But it's also, like you said, I think the platform is amazing. So it's if people can play it, I think it's very, very much worth playing.
Yeah, I mean, I just encourage anybody who hasn't joined a league in the NFBC, and nobody's I don't have any affiliation with them, but yeah, I do honestly think it's the best platform out there. It's the most competitive. So, you know, and there are lower price points. Like, when people hear NFBC, like the baseball championship, I think some people kind of get like intimidated by that. There are lower price points. Like, I'm also in a main event qualifier, you know, and that's $125. You win your league, you win an entry into the main event, which is a pretty sweet deal. So, you know, I think anybody who's been a little tentative to jump in, give it a try. I'm pretty sure that you're going to enjoy yourself. Cause again, the competition is just better, which to me, at least, it makes it much more fun.
Yeah, and something I'll echo on that is I've been preaching, like, I do the $50 OC qualifiers. I won one last year. I'm in a couple this year. If you win, you get an OC ticket, which is worth $350. There's also satellite leagues. There's $100 leagues, $150. Like, there's all different satellite leagues that are standalone leagues, so you can get your feet wet in the format and build your bankroll. per se. There's so many ways to do it. Like, and that's how I was at first. I thought it was like, oh no, I got to pay $1,500 or whatever, $1,750 right. now. To like, I'm like, there's no way, but there's a lot more, and they're getting better. Cause even like, you're on the wire guys, you mentioned awesome dudes. They did like listener leagues that were $50 and they were just their leagues, and NFBC customized it for them. Like, I'm thinking about doing some of those this next year just to get people to try the format and figure it out. Cause I think it's a really cool thing. So 100% with you on that. There's more than just the big, big, big tournaments that could scare even myself off. So I get it. I 100% get it. All right. Let's talk surprises. And as we did this, I picked one player from each team. There's obviously could be more good, bad. I tried to stay optimistic. I love my listeners. They didn't all stay optimistic, but that's fantasy baseball in a nutshell. But it's a fun conversation to be had because, it's been a wild first half of the season. So I did this in alphabetical order, thanks to Roster Resources, made life a lot easier. But I'm starting off with Jorge Lopez, because if anybody to start the season told you Jorge Lopez would be the closer for the Orioles, and a pretty darn good one, picked up his 14th save tonight. The ratios are pretty good overall. He's striking guys out. You know, he's throwing gas for Jorge Lopez standards. It's been pretty interesting. So what are your thoughts on what he's done in this first half and potentially going forward?
Yeah, I totally missed on him, and I didn't even consider him at any point. It's just like Jorge Lopez, you know, he just was a failed starter and really, really bad. I'm like, how good could he be as a reliever? But man, he's been awesome. 59% ground ball rate. His velo has ticked up over 2 miles an hour in the bullpen. He's got a 213 BABIP, probably due for some regression. But, you know, if you're getting the ball on the ground that much and throwing that hard, you know, I think it's, you know, it's not going to be that bad. Even when he regresses a little bit. And I think the question for him is whether Baltimore hangs on to him at the deadline. You know, I don't see a reason for them to keep him. He's a good story. But yeah, to me, they're in a position where, you know, they're on the upswing here. They're, you know, at this point, I'm not sure if he really holds much value for them. So that's really my only question. And the Orioles are actually better this year than we thought they were going to be. They're actually winning games too, which is giving them more save opportunities. So, if you have him, I think you're hanging on to him, but just, I think if you need to back yourself up, I think it's Felix Bautista, if they don't trade him as well. So it's so hard with these trade deadline situations. Like, you just don't know if the next in line is going to get traded as well. So, that's tough, but really impressed with what he's done so far, and a great story too, man. Like, he's got, I don't know if you heard, like, his son, I believe, has like these autoimmune conditions. So like, I was just reading about that when I was doing some prep for this, and I'm like, man, next time I complain about like my kids or whatever, you know, it's like, just shut up, you know, like, shut up, because you gotta appreciate, like, I got a healthy, happy kid. I'm like, just stop, you know? So he's an easy guy to root for. So,
definitely. It's a great story. And you mentioned their bullpen's one of the best bullpens in baseball this year, which is insane to think about when you talk Baltimore Orioles. You mentioned Felix Bautista. He's one of those closer specs you guys can go look at, because eventually someone's getting traded. That's just the bottom line. But yeah, it might be both of them. So you might go down to Tate or someone else. It'll be interesting to see with that going forward. So yeah, Jorge Lopez, great, great story. I guess we'll see how it plays out going forward. Any other thoughts on Mr. Lopez?
No, let's move on to
Mr. Nick Pavetta. This one is a tough one because I put this together before he blew up on Monday night or Tuesday night, before he blew up on Tuesday night. So that kind of takes a step back. But prior to that start on Tuesday, he was really, really, really good, and has been almost like the ace of that rotation. So he's been a welcomed addition to the team. Now, he's a surprise, and I guess, in how good he's been doing. I know a lot of people were in on him as a sleeper pick this year. But, Nick Pavetta, for me, is the surprise, because, you know, Devers is amazing. Jaron Duran's getting close to being the surprise. He's actually playing a lot. But I gave it to Pavetta. What do you say?
Yeah, so I was looking at his skills, and honestly, like, I felt badly because I don't have him either anywhere. I feel like this is a theme with a lot of players that were on this list. I'm like, I don't have any of these guys. But with Pavetta, after looking at the skills, I'm like, he's kind of Nick Pavetta, you know? Like, he's got an 8.9% home run to fly ball rate. career mark is 15%. So I think we're going to see some regression there, because it's not like there's been a change, like, you know, the batted ball quality. Like there's nothing there that indicates that he should have that much of a lower home run to fly ball rate. His fastball velo is actually down this year, a tick to 93.4. So again, I think he's kind of the same pitcher he's been. One thing I will say about him is that he's going 5.9 innings per start, which, you know, he's giving you volume. He's already pitched 100 innings. So that is valuable. And he's not a bad pitcher by any means. But, you know, I think a guy who can give you volume and give you, even if it's just like regular old Nick Pivetta, that has value definitely in 15 teamers, and I think even in 12s. But I got a trivia question for you, Bubba.
Okay.
What former Red Sox pitcher was Nick Pivetta traded for in 2015?
Ooh, 2015.
Yep.
Nick Pivetta, former Red Sox pitcher. Let's go with Josh Beckett.
In that era, but you're kind of close. It was Jonathan Papelbon.
Oh, wow. Wow. Good old Papelbon. That's a good one. That's a good one.
Oh, I couldn't stand him. I did like his entrance music, though. That Shipping Out to Boston song. That was one of my favorites. But Shipping Up to Boston, rather.
That's a good one.
Yeah, so that's Nick Pivetta. What are your thoughts on him?
I agree with what a lot of you are saying. Like, I like Pivetta. I think there's a lot of upside with Pivetta. We've seen a lot of the upside with Pivetta. But when you look under the hood, it's like you said, it's a lot of Nick Pivetta. Like, the FIPs and the ex-FIPs are saying he's getting a little lucky, if you want to really get into it. The velocity, you know, is not great. But the fact he's getting the innings, he's getting the strikeouts, he's on a very good team in the Red Sox that are scoring a lot of runs. He definitely fits the mold. He's definitely a player in 15s, as you mentioned. And I got him in 12s. I definitely do. And until he really starts hitting the fan, he's going to be out there more often than not. But it's one of those I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. It just hasn't really dropped enough yet. We'll see if it happens again after this last start. But I'm with you. I'm surprised he's been this good, because I'm used to, like, you know, it's a coin toss every time he comes out there. But he's been a little better than that so far this year. Let's go to the Chicago White Sox, Mr. Jake Berger, who, you know, we always, you know, have fun with the name, and he showed some power from time to time. He hits the ball hard, started to get regular playing time, and started hitting the ball very, very well for the White Sox. But now he got relegated to a platoon with Gavin Sheets, and now he's on the IL. So this surprise may be coming to an end. We shall see. But what's your thoughts on Jake Berger?
Yeah, it's kind of a moot point now. I mean, Mankata's back. Playing time is not really going to be there. He's injured, you know, and he's got power. You know, he's got a 114 max EV, almost 15% barrel rate. So dude hits the ball hard. I think he's a player in this league, but right now I don't think he's really fantasy viable. I mean, his contact rate is at 67%. So, you know, not someone I'm really, if I have him anywhere, he's getting dropped, and not someone I really feel like is worth picking up. Now, if Mankata goes down again, or there's other injuries in the White Sox lineup, then it's a discussion again. But, not really, you know, interested in him moving forward here.
Yeah. I liked running with him. This is a similar guy. Like we talked about earlier, we looked at the hot streak, you rode it, you did your thing. Yep. And it's like, now time to ditch. Like, you know, here we go. Time
Thank
to go
you for your service.
Yep. And that's the name of the game. Cause when you added him, you probably got him for cheap, and now you drop him and you do them with the next guy, and you just keep moving through the line. And like you said, maybe he comes back, Mankata gets hurt again, we do the dance again. Like, it's just how it works. But holding them right now is just a lost cause for sure. Even if he didn't go on the IL, it was starting to get bleak. And so it's time to move on from Berger. Like what we saw, but he's going to be one of those really streaky guys, it feels like. So we'll have to kind of wait and see how that one goes. All right. Cleveland Guardians. This one's really fun because it was last year. Everyone was like, Andrés Giménez, the greatest thing ever. Power, speed. He's going to do it all. Yeah, he didn't do it all. I hate to break it to you guys. You know, spoiler alert. But this year, as kind of a little more the buzz died down for Giménez, he's playing pretty darn good. He's hitting almost 300 entering today, 9 home runs, 6 stolen bases. Like, you probably thought more steals from him, but overall, he's been, at least for me, way more productive than I ever thought he would be. So he's a big surprise for me. What are your thoughts on Andrés Giménez?
Yeah, like you said, I expected more in the stolen base department, but he's kind of making up for that by giving you a little bit more power than you expected. He's got a 187 ISO. Really, the biggest thing for him is playing time now. I mean, last year he was kind of relegated to platoon. Now he's got he's played 21 of the Guardians past 23 games. That's due to a major improvement against lefties. He's only got he's got a 15% K rate. You're not getting any pop from the left side, but at least he's becoming passable against lefties. He's got like above a 100 WRC plus against them. So that's huge. You know, if he's an everyday player, I think we could expect a little bit more speed moving forward. But yeah, the power has been pretty good. The barrel rate has doubled from 3.6% last year to 7.8% this year. So I think he's a player to be excited about. Still only 23 years old. But here's my my fun fact on, or yeah, well, this one's a fun fact on Andrés Giménez. And I like to trigger the Met fans. My dad's a huge Mets fan, and you know, I'm a Yankee fan, so I like to have a little fun with them. And he's going to be listening to this, so he'll like this one. So I'm going to give you a number, and you tell me what it is as it relates to Andrés Giménez. $31,100,000.
Oh, this ought to be good. This is going to be really good. Is this how much money that Francisco Lindor cost that the Mets could have saved by keeping Andrés Giménez?
Exactly. Yeah, you nailed it. And WRC plus for Francisco Lindor, 114. Giménez, 137.
Oh, I love it. I love it. This is amazing. That's so good. So good. Just another Mets.
Can't wait for the Mets fans to respond. Yeah.
They're still paying Bobby Bonilla. Now they're going to pay Francisco Lindor. It's good times. Good times being a Mets fan. You know, maybe they'll get DeGrom back soon. Who knows? We'll see. We'll see how that goes.
I hope so for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you there. For baseball fans, we all want DeGrom back. Detroit Tigers. It's not easy finding a surprise in Detroit, I'll be honest. So I went with Gregory Soto just because so many were poo-pooing him going into the season. Dude's got 16 saves, one of the most saves in baseball, at least in the American League. Striking guys out okay. Walks too many guys. That's always been a problem for him. Ratios are okay, at least the ERA. Obviously, the whip is not great. The XFIP and everything don't point to good stuff. But we expected a roller coaster from Soto. And I think if you drafted Soto and took a chance on Soto, he's definitely outperforming your expectations so far.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's 16 for 18 in save opportunities. And he's one guy I actually did have in a couple places and on my main event team because he was really like my ideal closer target. You could get him in the middle rounds. He was going in like round seven. I think I got him in round six or seven. And the reason I took him is because the Tigers said right away he was the guy. So, and that's what I'm looking for because I'm not a big fan of spending a second round pick on a closer. I did videos on that and I know, you know, there's a lot of different opinions on that. Not saying that I'm right, but I just prefer to go for like those middle tier guys who I know at least have the job and have some leash. So the fact that the Tigers were so open about him being the guy, I'm like, all right, well, they're going to give him some leash there. And in the second half last year, he did show some improved skills. His velocity went up a tick. He had an increased strikeout rate. So it didn't start out great for him this year. The peripherals were very ugly, and it was like, all right, let me get Michael Fulmer on all my teams because I thought he was going to lose a job. But, man, he's turned it around. The K rate is up to 34% in June. With him, too, though, I don't know. I think the Tigers are going to keep him. He is eligible for arbitration next year, but you never know. I think Fulmer's going from there. I wouldn't be totally shocked if Soto went, being that he's a lefty and he could be really valuable for a contender. I'm wondering, would you take, like, let's say Soto versus Bednar? Who would you rather have going forward?
Well, that's fun because both might get traded. So that's really tricky. I think Soto, just because as weird as this sounds, I think Detroit wins more games than Pittsburgh, so he has more save chances. Bednar, I think, is the better pitcher, 100%. Like, he's filthy.
Yeah.
Really filthy. Sure. And he goes more like he's kind of a Josh Hader almost. He'll give him two innings, sometimes three. But the Pirates just don't give him many chances. So I think I go Soto. What about you?
I probably tough. Go Bednar just because that's why I came up with the question. It's not an
genius,
easy one.
Genius.
I can't even answer it myself. Probably Bednar, just because I think the skills are not as shaky, and I don't think they're going to trade him. I think, and there's been people talking about this, like he's a hometown guy, and Pirates are on the upswing here, so maybe they just hang on to him. Probably Bednar. But my other question for you is, what, this is very random, but what Bob Marley song title does Gregory Soto have tattooed on his neck?
Oh my goodness, I have no idea. I don't even know where to begin on that one. I didn't even know he had a song title on his neck. Oh, that's great.
I mean, come on. Do you really? I mean, you got to know your players, Bubba. I mean, you may know their X stats or whatever, but
I only know guys with tattoos on their lows. I only know tattoos on the lower back. I don't pay attention to the neck tattoos. So,
All right. Respect
I don't know. What is it?
One Love. You know,
that makes sense. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's one of the popular ones. I got it. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. So, all right. Well, that is a takeaway, guys. Like, if you are going to draft a player, you really got to get to know them. You got to know their personal lives, their tattoos. Like,
you're a Yankees fan. I go deep. You're a Yankees fan. What's tattooed on Aroldis Chapman's neck?
I don't want to know.
I don't even know. I don't even know. I'm just curious now.
Yeah. No, that one I don't know.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the Houston Astros, a pivot for Yankees fans everywhere. Jeremy Peña could be the AL Rookie of the Year, hitting .273 with 12 homers, 6 stolen bases. I know some smart people were in on him because it looked like, you know, going through spring, he was going to be the starting shortstop. I never thought he'd be this good. I was a fool and did not buy into the hype. I regret every moment of it so far. He has been absolutely amazing, Torres. So what's your thoughts on Jeremy Peña?
Yeah, so he started out just on fire, right? I mean, he was looking like hands down going to be the rookie of the year. And still, you look at the overall numbers, they look solid. But just something I'm just paying attention to, like his quality of contact has not been good now since May. And I know he got injured in June, but that was on a diving play. He hurt his thumb. So that didn't have anything that, you know, in May, I don't believe there was an injury affecting him. Hard hit rate was at 22% in May and June after being at 36% in April. In reference to Toby here, I pulled up his rolling graph and his skills have been trending down all across the board. The contact percentage has decreased. O swing has been up over 40%. He's only been walking 3-4% since May. So I don't know if it's a matter of just him hitting a rookie wall, the league figuring him out. But, you know, you look at the rest of season projections, pretty solid. Bad X has him as a $6 player rest of season in a 15-team league with 10 home runs, 6 steals, and a .255 average. So that is solid there. But just something to pay attention to because, you know, the skills definitely have not been as solid for him.
Now, obviously, you can't do this in an NFBC league, but say you can in some other formats. Would you look to trade Jeremy Peña from what you're seeing right now?
It all depends. I mean, yeah, it's tough. You know, these questions in the vacuum are tough. I would definitely consider, you know, like if I have a viable replacement for him, you know, and I have a need, I would definitely be willing to shop him. But I got trivia for him, too. And this is a good one. All right. So what other major league shortstop does Jeremy Peña share a birthday with?
And he's an active. Is he a starting major league shortstop? Can I get a cheat?
Yes. And he's in the American League.
Starting shortstop. It'd be great if it was Carlos Correa because that's the guy he replaced. Is it Carlos Correa?
You are right. Carlos Correa. I mean, how freaking weird.
You can't make that up.
Like, he comes in for Correa, and everybody's like, well, forget about Carlos Correa. I mean, this guy might be better, you know? It's just so bizarre. When I looked that up, man. I mean, couldn't believe it. But who would you rather have rest of season, Correa or Peña?
Probably Peña. This is where fantasy baseball, and it's a very big problem I have. I have biases, and Carlos Correa has a big bias in my world. Like the injuries he has, he doesn't steal bases, or at least Peña will steal some bags. I think he'll score more runs than Correa, hitting second in that Astros lineup. Correa probably gets more power. I'll take Peña, and I know a lot of people will disagree with me on that.
Yeah, I'd probably It depends, you know, like if I need more power, I'm probably going Correa, but I know he's not going to get me any speed. So depends on what the rest of my team looks like, but they're close. I mean, if you look at rest of season projections, they're kind of, I think they're like two spots away from each other in terms of projected value for the rest of the season. So
that'll be a fun one to pay attention to going forward. Another fun one is the Kansas City Royals. I could have just put Bobby Witt Jr., but I think everyone was so hyped on him when he got drafted so high, it didn't quite fit the mold for me. So it was tough finding a replacement for that. But I went Hunter Dozier mainly because people told me I was a fool for thinking he'd be serviceable, especially in DCs. He's got 9 home runs, 2 stolen bases, hitting .264. Like, not a world beater by any means, but very serviceable. And if you want to talk about a guy, if you want to look like at his last 14, 30 days, whatever, the quality of contract metrics suit Hunter Dozier very, very well. So what's your thoughts on a Hunter Dozier? Again, not an easy pick when it comes to Kansas City.
He's kind of boring, right? I mean, he's having an okay year right now. He's .220 overall on the Razzball Player Rater. I mean, I think last year he was a little unlucky. You know, and this year his BABIP is like 50 points higher, so it's like he's kind of making up for that. Contact rate is up 5 points from 69% last year to 74% this year. And he's playing every day too. And, you know, now he's going to be hitting behind our new boy, Vinny P. Yep. So hopefully some more RBI opportunities on the way. I feel like just being in Vinny P's presence is just going to, like, maybe it just unlocks Hunter Dozier.
Yes.
But, yeah, and he's probably going to keep playing every day because the Royals are, I'd imagine, going to ship off some pieces here at the deadline. Hunter Dozier is on a team-friendly contract. He's a versatile player. They probably just hang on to him and just throw him out there for the rest of the season. So, you know, he's serviceable. He does have multi-position eligibility, which we talked about the value of that. He's first, third, and outfield. So definitely a guy that I'd be cool with having on my bench in 15s.
Yeah, for sure. That's why I love them for DCs, just for that versatility more than anything. So boring is a great way to describe him, but he will have stretches where he'll be very serviceable. That's for sure. Another guy.
I got trivia for you on this one. I don't miss any here. All right.
Bring it.
All right. What nickname did Hunter Dozier choose to wear on his jersey for Players Weekend in 2019? Which I think they should bring back, by the way. But
they should.
And this one's not that hard. You don't have to be that creative to come up
Bulldozer.
Pretty close. Bulldoze. Yeah, nicely done. I got to give you some, you know.
Yeah, some freebies. Give some, you got to give some freebies. Yes, yeah. I agree. They can't all be Carlos Correa, Sarah, a birthday. Whew.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So
no, I like that.
Moving on.
What would you have on the back of your jersey? Just Torres takes.
That's a tough one. It would probably just be Torres. Well, no, it can't be Torres because
that's your last name. You gotta be different. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, man. I guess Torres takes. I'd have to think about that one.
Yeah. Okay. Mike Kerwin is enjoying.
All right. So let's move on to another Torres. So.
Yes. Well, not yet. We haven't got there yet. He's coming up. We got to go to Los Angeles, okay. Angels, Anaheim first. Taylor Ward. Who Joe Maddon swore would be the starting outfielder, and so many of us were like, no, there's no way. You got Joe Adell. You got Brandon Marsh. What are you doing? Well, Taylor Ward is playing and playing very, very well. So I was very, very wrong on Taylor Ward. Did get him in some fab leagues, thank goodness, but still not ideal, but quite a surprise this year. What do you say?
He's been one of the biggest breakouts of the season. And it's really all about playing time for him. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Joe Maddon was like doing a meditation and all something, like all of a sudden, like he just had this epiphany that Taylor Ward is actually good and he should be playing every day. You know, last year I was like, I remember I had Taylor Ward on a few teams. Like, why is it this guy's skills are good? Like, why don't they just give him an everyday job? And then, you know, I was kind of in on him this year, but, you know, all of a sudden Joe Maddon decides like he's playing every day and leading off. So, and that unlocked him, You know, right now he's got 12 home runs with a 303 average. Skills are solid with a 13% barrel rate, hitting leadoff in front of Trout and Ohtani. Rest of season projected for 12 home runs, 3 stolen bases, and a 265 average, making him a $7 player rest of season, according to the BatX, which, you know, that's a solid projection. So my question for you on Taylor Ward is, which super smart, incredibly sharp NFBC player drafted Taylor Ward in the 50th round of one of his draft champions leagues?
Was this Torres?
One of the best. One of the best out there.
It wasn't you, was it?
It was me. I got him in the 50th round.
That's amazing.
Like, I mean,
this is why you're in second place in so many leagues.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that was when that one worked out, that felt good. But, and getting back to your Players Weekend question, it'd be CT3. That would be my Players Weekend name. So,
are you the third?
No, just like CP3, CT3.
I got you. I had to make sure. I had to check it out. Okay, cool. It's different. Minnesota Twins. Speaking of teams that were tough to find surprise players on, Johan Duran has been outstanding out of the bullpen. It looked like he'd be the closer, then he kind of got hurt. Now he's back. He's the closer again. He's got 5 saves. He's electric on the mound, throwing gas with nasty breaking pitches. He's pretty much the real deal, it seems, right now.
Yeah, man, he's filthy. It's just ridiculous stuff. I mean, average fastball velo, 100.6 miles an hour. The skills all line up. He's got a 1.79 Sierra. But really, the thing that matters is whether or not he gets the saves, right? So he's got 5 on the year, but we know that the Twins, they're not going to settle on just one guy. They want to use him in that high-leverage reliever role. And I think they're going to be looking in to bring in another high leverage reliever at the deadline. You know, they're in first place. I think I saw something about potentially like Lou Trevino being rumored to go there. So, you know, I think he's kind of going to be in the same role, but I think he's a perfect guy to have. We were talking about like roster construction before. He, for me, is like the perfect like swingman, like third closer / high leverage reliever that you move in and out of your lineup, depending on your starters, you know, probably starting more often than not, just because it's hard to find seven decent starters in a week. So I think he's the perfect guy because he'll get some ancillary saves, and we know like there's a good chance he's going to protect your ratios for you.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Him, like the Paul Sewalds, the Devin Williams of the world. They're those guys that we didn't really talk about it on the NFBC part, but it was on a week where like you're going, I really don't want to start that pitcher. Well, then you slide this guy in for the week. Like you don't have to play him every week, but they're a great fill-in spec closer type situation. So 100% agree with you on that one. All right. We go to the New York Yankees here, and we have a little Torres action. Gleyber Torres, who has 13 home runs on the year, 4 stolen bases, striking out less than 19% of the time, and hitting nearly .260. I think we can almost say he's back. Not completely, but he's getting close. So I think the comeback has been quite a nice welcome surprise this year.
He's back, baby. I mean, that's my brother from another mother. But he's considerably more rich and better looking than me. Let's make that clear. But his fly ball rate, one of the biggest things, I mean, the quality of contact has been better. Barrel rate is up to 10.6%. Fly ball rate jumped from 36% to 49%. Huge jump there. That's what you want playing in Yankee Stadium. You know, I think this is one of those things we need to look at, like some of the non-statistical things, like him switching from shortstop to second base. I think that's been helpful for him at the plate. We knew he was not a shortstop. He struggled defensively there. And I have to imagine that had some impact on him at the dish over the past 2 years. I think he's back. I mean, I couldn't. For someone to flash like he did in 2019 and to just fall off like he did, it was just like so head scratching. That player, like, you know, that old Ron Chandler at it, it's like once you demonstrate a skill, like you own it. Like we knew Gleyber had that. He was still so young. Like I unfortunately did not take any chances on him this year. In hindsight, I'm kicking myself, but I think he's going to be solid rest of the season, hitting in a good lineup. So yeah, I'm in on him, but I want to ask you, do you know what Torres means in English?
Is, I know Toro's bull. Is it related to bull or am I wrong?
Nope.
Okay. What's Toro? I feel bad because I know a lot of Spanish too, but I do not know Torres. What's it mean?
Towers.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
All righty. Good to know. Good to know. You added a second New York Yankee, and I like this one quite a bit. So what do you got for us?
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about, you know, surprise players, we got to talk about Nasty Nestor Cortez. I mean, yep. He's got a top five stash and a top 10 whip on the year. I mean, he's number 58 overall as of yesterday on the Razzball Player Raider. Listen, he's doing it with command. The stuff is not overwhelming. According to Cameron Groves' stuff metric, which you could follow him on Twitter at PitchingBot. It's an awesome resource. He has a stuff rating, and 50 is considered average. So Cortez is sitting at a 45, which obviously is below average. The command, however, is graded out at 60. So he's really getting by on good command. Can he sustain that the whole year? Yeah, I mean, possibly. You know, I put out a tweet like a month ago about like how this reminds me kind of like the R.A. Dickey season, you know, like when he just came out of nowhere. I think it was like 2012, and it just all came together, you know, and just he put a full seat and will end up winning the Cy Young. I don't think Cortez does that, but sometimes guys just put it together. But he's a good pitcher. He's increased his cutter usage to 36% this season, which is almost as much as his fastball. I believe the fastball is getting a 12% swinging strike rate, which is above average for a fastball. Slider has gone, this is a little concerning. Slider has gone from 11% to a 6% swinging strike rate this year, which is well below league average. League average for slider whiff rate is 15%. So all that is to say, I think we do see some negative regression for Cortez, but I think he's still going to be very solid, be an asset to your fantasy teams. Steamer rest of season has him down for a 3.98 ERA and a 1.20 whip. Bat projections have him for a 26% K rate. So that, to me, that makes him like a solid SP3 the rest of the season. And, you know, the win potential being on the best team in baseball, that also provides a nice boost to his value.
Yeah, I love Nasty Nestor. I have him a lot of leagues right now, so I'm a big fan of what we're seeing.
Why didn't you tell me anything beforehand? I mean, come on, like another guy I don't have anywhere.
I drafted a lot, but it was one of those that people said there's no way he can. Because I loved how he finished last season, but to be fair, I loved how Ranger Suarez did too. So I had a lot of him as well. So win some, you lose some. I was willing to take some chances on Nasty Nestor. So I'm a big fan of what we saw there. And did I think he'd be this good? No. I'm not crazy, but it's been impressive. And impressive to watch him. Like you said, nothing beats that stash. That stash is absolutely amazing. So,
All right, so let me ask you this then. Mm-hmm. Who's got this is a two-part question. So Nestor Cortez or Spencer Strider rest of season, but also who's got the better stash?
Yeah. I'm gonna go with Strider for now because it feels like he does more with it. Or Nestor's just got like business stash, unless I've missed something lately. Where Strider kind of curls his and stuff once in a while. Like Strider, he models his once in a while. Rest of season, that's a great question. That's why you asked it, of course. I'm going to go with Nestor just because I'm worried with Strider they're going to start limiting him from time to time because he's so young. Mm. I'm going to go with Nestor, but I like them both a lot. I think that's a really good comp right there.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I'm with you on that one.
All right, Oakland Athletics. Not a lot of surprises here, to be really honest. So I went with Seth Brown. He's actually been serviceable. I know some people like him coming into the year with the power speed we saw last year. You know, 20 home runs, 4 stolen bases. This year, 10 home runs already, 7 stolen bases. No batting average to enjoy. But a little power speed from the Oakland Athletics. Any thoughts on Seth Brown?
Nah, I mean, this whole team makes me nauseous, man. Like everything about them. I look at that lineup every day. I'm like, oh my God. The ballpark, it's so bad in Oakland. They're a disgrace. They are an absolute disgrace to baseball that they are you know, tanking this bad. And it's pathetic. But anyway, Seth Brown. He's got some sneaky speed. 7 stolen bases on the year, which is more than Andrés Giménez. The thing with him is that he is a platoon player. You know, he's can't hit lefties. He's got a 29 WRC plus against him this year, 30 WRC plus for his career. Hashtag not good. One thing I will say, though, we were talking about expected stats before. According to StatCast, 273 expected batting average, according to them. So I don't know. I don't know if that, you know, how much weight we should put into that. But again, like we were talking about before, it's a piece of the puzzle, something to consider. I'm not expecting him to be a 270 hitter. He just doesn't have that profile. But maybe you get a 230 or 240 instead of
a 240. Like maybe we meet in the middle. That's doable.
Right. Yeah. So, but yeah, he's not going to play against lefties. But when he is playing, he's hitting second or third when he does start. So he's a borderline guy in 12 teamers, and you know, a decent corner in 15 teamers. But even there, like we talked about our bench before, like I'm trying not to put too many, like maybe Seth Brown qualifies, but like I really don't want guys who are in a platoon even on my bench, you know, because it just it gets hard to play them, you know. Like why am I going to put in Seth Brown when he's, even if he's say got like 3 games Monday through Thursday and only 2 of them are against a righty, like do I really want that, you know? Is it worth it, especially in that lineup? So he's kind of questionable for me right now. But want to ask you, what famous actress is Seth Brown dating right now?
Oh, my. I honestly didn't know he was dating a famous actress. So can you give me a hint?
Well, I'll be honest, Bubba. I'm just totally, I'm making that up.
I didn't think he was dating one.
I had nothing on Seth Brown. He's such a generic name that I can't even find anything about him. Funny. But hey, but Cole Tucker. Listen, Cole Tucker is dating Vanessa Hudgens.
Yes.
So why not Seth Brown? Why can't Seth Brown be dating J-Lo?
Maybe Seth Brown needs to get the Cole Tucker hair. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And as you can tell from me, I know a lot about the hair. So, yeah, right. I'm with you there. The one thing I'll say about Seth Brown, and it goes back to the lineup bench situation, what he's good for is when you look ahead for streaming, when it is a week where it's a lot of right-handed pitching. That's where Seth Brown comes into play. Otherwise, it's tough. So I'm with you 100% on that one. Now, I'm going to cheat on this next one. I didn't take Bobby Witt earlier, but for the Mariners, I'm taking Julio Rodriguez, partly because he wasn't drafted super highly until we knew he was on the team, so there's a little bit of a surprise there. And let's be honest, did we expect to see a guy hitting 277 with 15 home runs and 21 stolen bases at the beginning of July? I think that's even better than most expected. So this dude is insane, Torres.
Yeah, I mean, he is just a fantasy superstar, first rounder next year, fastest player ever to reach 15 home runs, 20 stolen bases in his career, number 6 right now on the Razzball Player Rater. I mean, he's got it all. He's a blast to watch. He's engaging, charismatic, like this dude should be over all over every marketing campaign for MLB. Like MLB cannot market their stars. Like they're so bad at it, but like you have this dude on, like he is the guy, you know. I think he's the next superstar. He's like the next Acuna, you know. I think he's just going to crush the rest of the year. And it's just really a matter of how high is he going to go in the first round next year? Yep. You know, over the past 30 days, I was just looking, he has a 21% barrel rate. Contact rate is a little lower than you'd like, 68% during that stretch. But listen, when you're making that good quality of contact and stealing bases, being as aggressive as he is, which I didn't even realize like he was that much of a base stealer, you're just going to be an absolute stud.
Yeah, I did not expect the speed, the base stealing that we're seeing. I'm 100% with you on that. Like we expected some pop and everything, but what he's doing is insane, and he's just a joy to watch. He's just a joy. Like you hear him in his interviews and stuff, the dude just having fun playing baseball. Like it's everything you need. Like you said, baseball just doesn't know how to get out of their own way. It's because they're playing for that metal, the hunk of metal trophy, apparently. So it's just it's a mess over there in the offices in New York. But love watching Julio. I can't wait to see where he goes in drafts next year, because it's already a topic of conversation, and it's July 6th. So it's crazy what he's putting together right now. Tampa Bay Rays. Isak Paredes, 13 home runs already. The Detroit Tigers are like, why? Why now? So I'm waiting for it to slow down. This week hasn't gone great, but it's a short time. He's still playing very, very well. What's your thoughts on Isak going forward?
Yeah, man, 13 home runs, 336 ISO for the Rays this year. I mean, listen, the Rays don't win every trade, but it seems like they win most of them. And this one is a landslide. You know, they acquired Paredes in the Austin Meadows deal. Dude's, you know, I think Meadows is zero. Does he even have a home run yet? I'm not sure. Maybe he has one.
Austin Meadows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not good. So, man, it's not looking good. But yeah. Paredes is not like, he's not like a huge natural power guy. I don't think it ever was part of his reputation coming up. But listen, when you got an 84% contact rate, you hit the ball in the air over 40% of the time and pull it. That's the big thing. Like he's really made, it seems like a conscious effort to pull the ball. I think last 30 days, he's at 52%. You don't need huge power to hit a lot of home runs when you're hitting the ball. When you have that swing. So is it going to continue like this? This is probably the peak, I would imagine, but man, he has been a boon for the Rays and anybody who picked him up a few weeks ago.
Yep. 100%. This is another one. I don't know if he'll be better than Jake Berger, but ride it, enjoy it. You're ready to ditch when you have to. But like you said, the contact skills and the fact I'm just amazed by how little he strikes out. I did not expect that. So that's a big plus. Like that can be things that these guys can get better and better. Those are the little things you can find, the puzzle piece where you can kind of glean and see where things go there. So I'm really looking forward to seeing where that continues on. Two more to go. Texas Rangers, Martin Perez. And yes, it is 2022. Martin Perez, he has made 16 starts, has 7 wins, a 2.34 ERA, 3.69 xFIP. Okay on the strikeout departments. But he's been extremely serviceable this year. It's been crazy to watch. I'm just always terrified of when's it going to fall apart. It really hasn't yet, but I'm still scared.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, it's Martin Perez. Like, I really don't have a lot to say about this one. And yeah. I remember I was on the pull hitter pod, like, I don't know, probably over a month ago now. And this was kind of my reaction then. And now I look like a jerk for dismissing him, because since then, I mean, he's been great. He's really, I mean, look, he's got a 2.34 ERA this year. But like you said, Bubba, it could just fall apart anytime. Like, I don't see anything here indicating that he's all of a sudden, a different pitcher. Same velo, no real change in pitch mix, swinging strike rate, 8.3%. Like, he's been the same guy. So just be very careful with him moving forward. Ground ball rate is up quite a bit, I'll say that, but
true.
Yeah, just something to, you're really gonna have to be careful with him moving forward.
Yep. Tread lightly. Last but not least, the Toronto Blue Jays, and they have a lot of great ball players, but Alejandro Kirk has been thoroughly and a joy to watch, and just amazing period, hitting 317 with 10 home runs, but a near 12% walk rate, and he's striking out less than 10% of the time. Like, this is almost Tony Gwynn-esque as a catcher, which is crazy to see. Tony struck out even less than this, but in this era of baseball, this is Tony Gwynn-esque. It is awesome to watch Alejandro Kirk, and he's just, I guess I'm calling him a surprise, but this is just awesome to watch.
Yeah, he's just been amazing this year. He's everything I wanted Williams Astudillo to be.
Yes.
So at least we're getting there with Oh man, I was in on him a couple years ago and thought maybe, you know, with the contact rate that he had, but he just, it never worked out. But we got some good laughs out of him though. Him rounding third base. But Kirk, I mean, dude's got he's got it all. He's a catcher with an elite plate discipline, above average quality of contact with a 10% barrel rate, hits in the middle of a really good lineup. I wish we could see a little bit more playing time. He started 15 of the last 20 games, so they alternate him between catcher and DH. Wish I could see, you know, wish the Blue Jays would just be like, this dude is one of the best hitters in baseball. Like, let's just put him in there every day. When he's not catching, he is our DH. which I feel like eventually they're going to have to, right? I mean, they can't. Why would you bench a guy like this? But yeah, he lasts 14 days. It's ridiculous numbers. 51% hard hit rate. Contact rate is like 85%. The Bat X has him as a $13 player rest of season, which would be the third most valuable catcher moving forward. So like with him, how high does he go next year? Because I don't see any holes in what he's done. Like, I think he's going to continue this.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's crazy. There's no holes at all. And I think he was about to get traded, it felt like, at one point in time, because the Morenos and the Danny Jansons, like, there's an embarrassment of riches in Toronto. So we'll have to see how they handle that. But yes, they just keep playing him. DH him, I don't care. Play Alejandro Kirk. That's the most important part. All right,
so here's my trivia.
Oh, you got one.
I gotta give me my trivia. Yep. Back in 2020, Alejandro Kirk became the youngest catcher to have 4 hits in a game since this catcher did it in 2004.
Oh, 2004. They're gonna go deeper than that. 2004, youngest catcher. 2004.
He was really good
for me, at least.
And he was in the American League.
And in the American League, Joe Mauer.
Nice job, man. All right, going out with a bang.
Yes. Yeah, I'm a baseball nerd. It's okay. I got you.
Yeah.
All right, some listener thoughts. There's submissions for surprises. Yancey Eaton, Shane McClanahan. That's a good call. I guess I didn't take him because he was still getting kind of drafted high, but good one. Then he mentioned Andrés Giménez, Julio Rodriguez, who we hit on. Bad surprises, Joey Gallo, Whit Merrifield, Javi Baez. Fair. Next up, Ray Butler mentions Jonah Heim has been a godsend for me in a few leagues. Taylor Ward, Jorge Lopez. We hit Ward and Lopez, but Jonah Heim, good call in Texas. Very, very good call there. I could have put him over Martin Perez. Michael Simeone says, we both know Baez will hit like 25 home runs in the second half. Also, anyone who rostered Gallo, why? Just why? Okay, fair. I'll get all your takes on this in a minute. Heath Caps says, Lourdes Gurriel is one of my AL surprises, but he expected more punch. I agree, but he's hitting great, just no power. Joe G says, Luis Robert is another disappointment, and then he proceeded to hit a home run like seconds after that tweet, so that was very, very funny as well. So any thoughts on any of those? Like, they're good submissions. They hit a lot of the ones we talked about already. Any that we might have missed that you would have liked to have talked about? Thoughts on surprises as we are halfway through this baseball season?
All right, you threw a lot at me here.
You don't have to go deep, just thoughts.
Yeah, so Luis Robert, yeah, that one sticks out to me because I am surprised. I felt like he was going to be just like a surefire, you know, like I was definitely confident taking him in the first round. I don't know if it's the injury or what. I mean, I'm pulling up his numbers here. 8 home runs, 126 ISO. Yeah, that is disappointing. 286 average, fine. 11 stolen bases, that's good. But yeah, not really sure what's going on with the power with him. Yeah, so a 9.2% barrel rate. Still, the max EV is there, so I'd bet on a power bounce back from him. That just, you know, but ground ball rate is up a lot, so. Yeah, I don't know. I have him on a few teams and I just, you know, put him out there. And I know Toby has talked about this. Like, sometimes you just put players in there and like you just kind of forget about them. You know, you don't really think to look at like how Luis Robert is doing. He's been good enough that you really don't, you know, put much onto it. But damn, I'm disappointed.
Yeah, I am too. I liked him a lot. I thought he'd be like the guy if you missed out on, you know, the Kyle Tuckers of the world or something, like he'd be your 2020 dude. Yeah, 100%.
Yep. Yep. McClanahan, I mean, he is
filthy.
I think he's going to be going with Garrett Cole and Corbin Burns next year in that top three pitchers in the first round. So he's doing everything that he's doing is being supported by his underlying skills. Joey Gallo, what a disaster. I mean, I only drafted him in one spot and I was just like, I felt sick afterwards, you know, but I didn't
expect been there.
Yeah. I like swore to myself, never do that. But sometimes you just do crazy things, you know? Yep. I think some guys are just not meant to play in New York. I really, you know, I think that's a thing. So yeah, he needs a change of scenery, you know. So those are my thoughts on, I'm just trying to remember here. We had Jonah Heim, man, 126 WRC plus. He's been home runs for a catcher. That is a nice, I don't have him anywhere, so I haven't really followed him that closely, but that is a nice season. So I don't know. What about you? Anybody that stands out there?
The Luis Robert one is a big one. Jonah Heim's a guy I've kind of, in some of my 12 teams, I've just kind of been rotating through, like Trevino, Heim, Cal Raleigh. I was like rotating through like for like a buck here and there based on matchups for the week. And Heim, his number's been called up a few times for me. So I like what we're seeing in that one. No Joey Gallo for me at all. Javi Baez has been a big disappointment. I thought, like, I was nervous. It is that I always kept saying eventually his craziness of the plate's going to catch up to him. I still think he's starting to show a few signs of life of late. So he's a guy that can literally bring back an entire season of stats in like a month. So
yeah,
I'm not completely done with him just yet because there's still signs of life with him, but it is disappointing, 100% disappointing. So that'd be kind of the ones there. McClanahan, I only have a few shares of because I was worried about how the Rays would utilize him with innings, just the way they utilize their pitchers. Yeah, I shouldn't have been afraid. It's been amazing with what they're doing with him. So it's going to be fun to see that discussion between Cole, Burns, and McClanahan, because there's some very smart NFBC players already saying they'd take McClanahan first, which is an interesting discussion for sure.
Wow.
So, yeah, it'll be fun. But, yeah, it's cool to see how these go. There's always surprises, and that's kind of what makes or break drafts. Like you said, you got Taylor Ward in the 50th round of a DC. It's like at the time you're thinking, okay, we're just kind of throwing wings and prayers out there. But if they hit, it's just it's gravy. It feels so good, man.
Yeah,
it's amazing, and that's kind of how it sounds silly, but that's how you win things, obviously. So, or even simple things like you talked about earlier, being early on Brandon Drury, like that's huge. People that were a week or two early on John Birdie, now they got like 18 stolen bases from the dude. It's those little things go a long, long ways. So. Yeah. Most definitely. Any final thoughts before we head out of here, Torres? It's been an absolute pleasure chatting it up with you tonight.
No, that's it. I appreciate you having me on. Man, you make it so easy. Like, I got to say, like, not just because I'm on your podcast, but like, you just so, like, I just felt like so comfortable talking. It's just amazing. Like, you're a great host, man. That's what I'm trying to say. So, not blowing smoke. I just wanted to point that out. But, yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me on. Anybody wants to follow me, I'm at Torres Takes. You know, I'm just right now just putting out nonsense and, you know, some videos once in a while. So, you know, please go check out, like it, if like, comment, share, whatever, if you enjoy it.
You should follow him, people. Very simple. As you can tell, by just listening to the show, funny guy, very smart guy. His Twitter is just like that as well. A lot of great content to help you with your fantasy leagues and also to take some you know, brevity off the situation. Laugh a little. Enjoy life. And that's what it's all about. Have some fun with the game of fantasy baseball. So I appreciate you joining me. I'm looking forward to doing it again sometime. It was an absolute blast. Definitely. And talking baseball with you tonight, Torres. Thanks a lot.
All right.
All right, everybody. This was Benched with Bubba, episode 486, first half American League surprises. Catch y'all later.